and introduce our first presenter, which is Connie Lake.
Yes. Hi, everyone. I'm Connie Lake. And I am a hopeless, powerless, dying, own shit, piss and vomit alcoholic. You know, how many people in here have ever been in rehab? How many have been here more than once? More than one rehab. How many people have seen, have been to at least 90 meetings in 90 days? How many people have been years of meetings? You've gone to literally years of meetings. How many people have seen AA depicted on TV? Anybody see addiction and recovery depicted on the big screen in movies? Right. You know, so we all come, and I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't start drinking till I was 19 or 20, but by the time I was 26, I was already a full-on alcoholic. You know, and then I spent 8 years almost dying of alcoholism, you know, slugging it out. And when I got to AA at the age of 34 with everything still intact, I had my gorgeous career. I was a marathon. I was a competitive runner. I had everything still. And in over 20 years of Alcoholics Anonymous, I lost that. I was powerless to stop it. You know, one time I had 4 years, you know, and then I had 2 years. I took a year off of bad behavior. And then I, you know, try and 2 months, 6 months, 4 months, 30 days, 32 days, 42 days, and on, you know, until finally I was like so desperate. I had 4 days sober. I had a seizure and I crushed my legs. I now wear a bionic leg above knee amputee and my other leg is crushed. So, I was in AA for 20 years, and I cannot drink for 15 minutes without getting into trouble. I was sentenced back to AA, and I didn't want to go. I knew there was magic here. I knew there was power here. I knew that some people were staying sober for good and all, but it just wasn't happening for me, and I didn't know why. And so God blessed me and brought me to my home group. And my sponsor said, "Are you willing to go to any length?" And I said, I thought I have. I have done everything in 20 years that my sponsors have asked me to do. I have filled out every worksheet. I was voted most likely to succeed in every cotton picking rehab, everything from CAP to a $50,000 a month rehab in Malibu. You know, I tried, and so when I got to he said, "Are you willing to do it?" And I said, "Are you willing to read the 164 pages?" That was Thursday night. By Sunday, I had reread them twice and annotated. And I thought I kind of had it going on, you know. I got in there, no. The first thing that my sponsor had me do is write in my book the set-aside prayer. God, please set aside everything I think I know about meetings, about AA, about the 12 steps, about my sponsor, about myself, about my prejudices, about God. Please set aside everything I think I know. Because I think I know a lot. You know, and if you look at your book, when you come to this particular process, we're not the only way to get sober. We're not. But I am that hopeless alcoholic. And you know what? I will kill myself before I drink myself to death because it was taking too slow and I could not stand the alcoholic torture. Cannot live with it. Cannot live without it. But even so, in a sober... Anyway, so I needed to come to this program, and this is just where I am a blank. You know, you open up this book and blank, that's where we should be. That's what I needed to be. And I prayed earnestly, honestly, in the beginning of the process over everything. Please set aside everything I think and know about home groups. Please set aside everything I think and know about my girlfriend, my best friend. Please set aside everything I know about my partner. Please set aside everything I bloody fucking think I know. So sorry I said that. Okay. You know, everybody, sometimes in the meetings, if you've been here long enough, you've read the promises of AA. And those are fantastic, those 10-step promises. They're extraordinary. But you don't have to wait till the 10th step to experience a promise, because on the very title page is the very first promise of hope. How many thousands of men and women have recovered from alcoholism. You know, I kind of like that. I tell my sponsors, it's kind of like diarrhea. If you have diarrhea and you're still recovering from it, you know what that's like. You're still sick. You're still recovering. So I was offered two choices. I could either never be, I could be in this group and never be alone and always have someone with me, but be sick and stay recovering every cotton picking day and slug it out and live my life like I need a drink, which I did. Or I could do this program, the exact, specific, precise instructions, and I can be recovered. I can be in a neutral. Because I'm telling you, in those whole 20 years, I was resentful that they could drink and I could not. You know, the first thing that we want to talk to, moving on, is about the circle and the triangle. Do you guys know the circle and triangle?
Yes.
Yeah, you know, they're on bumper stickers, they're on hats. Earrings, watch it, medallions, you know, forever, for 20 years, I thought the three sides of the triangle meant honesty, openness, and willingness. That's not what it means. You know, if this is Alcoholics Anonymous, and then the book was named for the organization, and the organization was named for the book. It would behoove us then to look and read and study the book like the basic text it is, with an experienced, qualified, responsible sponsor. And that circle and triangle has been around forever. It has long spiritual roots. The idea is that on one side there's the body, there's the mind, and there's the spirit. And if you could be balanced in all those three sides, you could be whole. Well, I have never been whole. I have been the most fragmented, you know, eye twitching, you know, I have not been well, you know. And so I learned to put the circle, in 1994 they took the circle and the triangle out of the book because of copyright laws. It turns out, if you have a copyright and other people use it, and it goes out into public domain, you have to fight it. You have to fight for that copyright. And Alcoholics Anonymous did not want to be litigious, so we didn't do it. We let go of the circle and triangle because there was a huge market for those AA items. When I, in 1995, I went to the World Conference in San Diego, and man, I got the Friends of Bill W. hat, you know, but they didn't say AA because that would have been against our traditions, but they used it. And so we've let that circle and triangle go out, but I didn't know what it meant. I thought it was just like kind of like a little secret sign on your car to let other people know that we're in the club. That's what I thought. That's not what it is. On one side, for your body, you absolutely... Okay, I'm in 20 years and I'm thinking I'm in AA. No, no, I'm not doing AA. Because the first thing you must do, if you are confused, if you've been trying this thing, and you've been doing everything everyone's been telling you to do, but you just don't know why you keep drinking, and everything is going to heck, and you're powerless and you're hopeless, and if you're desperate, this is the workshop for you. Because the first thing that I needed was a home group. I have never been committed to any group of people, or, you know, wholly committed to any one person, if I'm being honest. But I needed a home group. I needed a home group where I was accountable. I went every week. Whoops, I go to a business meeting. I go to all the business meetings. You know, I participate in group conscience. I events like this. I'm participating in this. Our group studies a tradition, thank God, every month. I participate in that. That's home group. And then you can also do the chairs and the coffee and the cakes. But that's home group. That's fellowship. On the bottom of the triangle is recovery. That's the 12 steps. And my sponsor told me, you know, Connie, I have a lot of problems when I came here. He said, Connie, do not tell me about your problems. I cannot solve your problems. You know, but I can take you through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and introduce you to a God who will solve all your problems. And I've never had coffee with my sponsor. I never call him about my problems, rarely. We don't have dinner. We're not friends. He's my sponsor. He's here to help save my life. This is sacred work. It's a life and death errand. You know, and I, you know, so you need then to do the 12 steps. All 12 steps. In order. And if you have ever been in a place where somebody has said to you for the first three steps, I can't, he can, so let him. Or, do you believe in God? Yeah. Are you alcoholic? Yeah. You know, turn your life over to the care of God? Yeah. No. No. That I always did the first three steps over a cup of coffee. And then try to launch into frickin' inventory? No, buddy. You know, our book is really, really clear. The first step is the doctor's opinion all the way up to page 43, plus pages 40, is it 44, 45, and 52? So, you know, you need to work with somebody who's done it and who's recovered and can tell you how to do it too. So, and then you work the 12 steps, all 12 steps. You know, then you take your awakened spirit. How am I doing on time?
You're doing good.
Okay. Do I have, okay.
11:18.
Oh, okay. No. Okay. I'm mad. No. Okay. And then you take your awakened spirit out into the world. You know, everybody's touched by it. Your family members, your partner, your work acquaintances, the Starbucks barista. You know, everybody's affected. But what we really do with that awakened spirit, we have been given a gift of life. We have been given a chance to live a life that I had never dreamed possible. To live with peace, to live with serenity, to be whole, to be happy. It's like, how much God do you want? You want a thimble full? Okay. You want a truckload full? Then get on this thing. Get in this thing. If you're desperate and you can't stop drinking or using, then get in this thing. Give it a shot. I thought I knew what alcoholism was. I didn't. So then we take that awakened spirit out into the world. After the first edition, the next part is the forewords. We read the forewords. We're so great and nerdy. We read the forewords and the prefaces because you know what? There's so much good information in there. I mean, first of all, you want to learn that when you go through Bill's story, the first two steps, did I drink like Bill? Did I think like Bill? Did I feel like Bill? You ask those questions constantly, not looking for the differences, but looking for the similarities. Don't look for the differences in me and you. Look for the similarities. This book is, what we are recovering from is a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. That's what we're recovering from. And the how is to show, and this is what AA is supposed to be about. We are not a social club. You know, we are to show other alcoholics precisely how we have recovered is the main purpose of this book. If you're not staying sober or being able to stay sober, oh my God, here we are. You know, precisely how we recovered. And we can show you precisely how we recovered. We are not perfect. We make mistakes. But we invite God in. How am I doing now? Also, we're not about quitting drinking. We're about a way of life. So if you think you're going to come in, do the 12 steps. When I first did the 12 steps the first time, my best friend, and I'm like, yeah, I'm on 12 steps. You know, 12 steps. She said, oh, great, you graduated. Can you drink now? No. I take that awakened spirit, and I go out into the world with it. And I help other, you know, alcoholics who are dying like me to be recovered and have a life that is worth living, because I lost everything worthwhile in AA. Everything. This is the other thing I want to say, and I know I might be going a little long. I just want to say this one thing. After the first edition, they took the doctor's opinion. The doctor's opinion used to be page one. But after the first edition, somebody decided that since Dr. Silkworth, our great medical benefactor, which you will learn about if you ask one of us, wrote this letter. It's all, I mean, my God, if you don't do anything else today, read the doctor's opinion. Read the doctor's opinion. I mean, you will get a clearer understanding of the of your grave nature, the grave nature of this disease. In the early AA, 50%, when they did it, the precise, exact, specific instructions in this book, 50% got sober for good and all at once. Boom. 50%. Then another 25% got sober with some attempts. Right? So I was so happy to hear that because I can be in the 25%. And guess what? My sobriety date is 1/12/13. I've got 9 years. That is a damn miracle. I did not do that. That is what God helped me do. Responsible, a home group, responsible sponsorship, and doing these steps. Do I have any time to talk about the spark? The spark. When I start drinking, I lose control. Do you?
Yes.
Okay, then talk to one of us. You know, if you lose control, okay, do you want me to tell a little bit about Bill, or is that it? Is that it?
You got everybody's attention. Do it, wrap up.
Okay, this is really quick. Okay, you may not know this about the founders. There's Bill W., who was a stockbroker, very, very bright. There was Dr. Bob, who was a doctor. Okay, Bill understood. I mean, he had everything. He was a stockbroker in the early 20s, and, you know, millions of dollars going through the till. Very exciting time. This is when the stock market crashed and everybody jumped out of the building. You know, so he realized finally, with Dr. Silkworth's help, that he had a craving he cannot control. There's nothing he can do about it. He can't control it. He's powerless. My sponsor cannot keep me sober. My great-grand sponsor, Dan Sherman, his sponsee hanged himself. Nobody can keep you sober if you're the real alcoholic. You are beyond human aid. So Bill understood that. He had a terrible craving, so he tried to work with alcoholics. Okay, in the meantime, in Akron, Ohio, Dr. Bob is part of this Oxford group, a Christian fundamentalist group. And everybody in that group was praying for Dr. Bob to get sober because they were waiting for him to say to the group, I'm alcoholic and I can't stop drinking. But he never did. So Bill comes to Akron, Ohio on a business trip, and it fails. He's broke. He's newly sober. His sponsor, Eddie Thacker, wound up drinking after 2 months, so he couldn't call his sponsor. He had a list of people he could call, and there were ministers. He went all damn through the list. The very last one was this woman called Henrietta Sieberling. She would be like if you called up Betty Ford or, the Rockefellers, right? Anyway, so he called her up and he said, you know, I'm Bill and I'm an alcoholic. Do you have anybody I can work with? And she said, thank God you called. We've been waiting for you. And then Bob said, I don't want to talk about my drinking. He said, I'll give him 15 minutes. And 5 hours later, Alcoholics Anonymous is born, and we're recovered. I hope you join us on our journey. Thank you.
Okay, you guys, so for the next two presenters, we're going to have Robert and Jaime come up. Come on up. They're going to present on step one.
Thank you
for opening the
Thank you, Connie.
Yeah.
Welcome to the dungeon, guys. So thank you, Connie, for kicking it off for us. Another hand for Connie. dig Connie's passion. My name's Robert. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Robert.
Hi, man. Alcoholic.
Hi, man.
So, going this network with Robert here.
Right. I mean, just picked up his year chip, I think, was it
yesterday? Yeah. Thursday night.
So, I'm a recovered alcoholic. I went through the steps about 5 years ago. I was a chronic relapser for 15 years before that. You know, I went through a lot of different rehabs and, you know, I had a lot of legal troubles and stuff like that, like a lot of people here. But anyway, I went through these 12 steps. I got desperate enough to become open to a different way of life and to really, I would say, submitting to this process, you know, and not trying to just take little bits of it or, you know, but just really seeking a way out of this. And I found, you know, this awesome way of life.
And I'd like to, I don't mean to bunny.
No, go ahead, go ahead.
But just yesterday I received a call from a fellow resident in rehab I was with last year. I don't know, I think he butt dialed me or something last night, and I hear him, and he's telling me that he's in a wheelchair because he got hit by a car, broken bones, and when they say like this disease is fatal, that's the truth, you know. And for a lot of years, I thought it was not something to, you know. Nothing serious. I'll just do it. I'll look into treatment tomorrow or the day after. I never took action until a little later than I wanted to. But yeah, just a little FYI for you guys.
Yeah, I think if any of us could have picked our sobriety day, we would have picked a while before it actually came. You know. But, you know, we get brought to that place of desperation, man. I think, you know, I think that's part of the, you know, like step zero is really just, you know, getting to that place, you know, but trying any means to, you know, avoid AA, I guess you could say, or trying any means to control my alcoholism so that I wouldn't have to do, you know, submit to a different type of process. But, you know, as long as I still think I have any little bit of control, I'm not going to see God to the extent that I need to. You know, so anyway, you know, we got this opportunity to talk about step one. I'm going to kind of jump right in. So like Connie described, you know, the AA program is a three-part program. And this disease is, I've come to understand it, is a threefold disease as well. Right. So this disease also affects the mind, the body, and the spirit in three different, very distinct ways. Right. So as an alcoholic, I can identify with all three of these different parts of alcoholism. And it really, I believe it takes all three to make a full-blown alcoholic. So, you know, looking at the first half of step one says that I'm powerless over alcohol, right? So what does that mean exactly, right? How am I powerless over alcohol? So the book's going to, you know, it kicks it off in the doctor's opinion. It talks about how I'm physically powerless over alcohol. The doctor describes... it actually describes an allergy that alcoholics have towards alcohol, right? And you can have the same type of allergy towards other substances as well, right? I'm an alcoholic, and I also have an allergy for, you know, a couple of other substances that probably other people here do too as well, you know. You know, he describes it as an allergy, right? And this differentiates us between other people, even between other hard drinkers, right? So. The allergy, so what an allergy is it's basically a sensitivity towards a substance that when taken in like amounts as somebody who's not allergic, in me it produces an effect that it doesn't produce in the other person, right? And he describes that effect as a craving beyond our mental control, right? So, and he talks about at once, right? That at once we develop this craving beyond our mental control. You know, so that's, you know, that's a good consideration if you're an alcoholic, right? How many, you know, have you ever just planned to have a little bit, right? Have you ever had good enough reason to just have a little bit, you know, just to do, you know, just have a, you know, a six pack or whatever, you know, and then way overshoot the mark, right? Right, overshoot the mark by, you know, sometimes by months. You know what I mean? Right. So, story of my life. Right. All these different times that I get things set up in my life, and I think, all right, now is the time where I can probably get away with just a little chipping, a little bit, or whatever. And then, boom, at once. Right. At once, the craving becomes paramount. right? And I'm not able to show up for those other things, man. And it's kind of a sad story, right? Because I don't understand what's going on. A lot of my family doesn't understand what's going on. They think I'm choosing this thing over them, right? They don't understand why I won't listen to reason. And you know, they can reason with me all they want, and I can even agree with them, but it doesn't change the fact that I'm in the midst of this craving that's beyond my mental control. Right, this thing is completely, you know, so that's to me, that's powerless, right? I mean, that's like raw powerlessness, you know. So yeah, looking back at my relapses, I mean, that's, you know, that's how I end up in jail. That's how I end up in rehabs. You know, it's never the plan to go to these places, you know. And like you said, it's usually way later than I'm supposed to, right? Way later than it makes sense, you know. I would tell myself sometimes, if it gets bad enough, I'll reach out for help. And when that time comes, I'm not able to pull, you know, to bring myself to do it, you know. So that's the difference between me and a hard drinker or a hard user. You know, a lot of us, I've used with a lot of, and drank with a lot of hard drinkers and hard users, and we may drink the same or use the same, but when it gets to that point where it's really, really time for them to stop and hunker down or whatever the case, they're able to, you know, and I'm just out there, you know, living on a bike or, you know, just riding around, you know, getting the mumbles, you know, talking or whatever, you know, out there. Looking pretty crazy, right? So that's not the plan, man. That's where the craving takes me, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, when I went to the doctor's opinion, it made sense to me that it's an allergy. I go, damn, you know, all these years of my life made sense finally, you know. It's like, no wonder I was never able to, you know, to learn control. Learn control or, you know, why it never mattered what my mindset was before I went into it or who I was hanging out with or whatever. I was always the one that lost control, right? Because, you know, I had this allergy that I didn't really even know about. You know, I was really sick.
Brother? Like as Rob says, like, I see my my close friends are after a night of drinking, they'd, okay, weekend's over, kind of pick up, get ready back for work on Monday. And for me, I've noticed, I wanted this, binge to go on further into the week. I wanted Saturday, Sunday to be like Monday, like pretty much every day of the week, right? Like that. So yeah. And, did start being more responsible, getting a designated driver. I wouldn't take those things into account. And next thing I know, I'm getting pulled over by Celia PD and being charged with a DUI. And I think someone that has a lack, those are like the symptoms of someone that has like a lack of power.
Absolutely. Thank you, Jaime. Yep. So I'm gonna move on. Thank you, Jaime. I'm gonna move on to so still in the first half of step one, right? We're powerless over alcohol, right? So I'm physically powerless over alcohol. But I'm also mentally powerless over alcohol, right? So the book is going to talk about the mental obsession, right? This great obsession that every alcoholic has, right? Which is the obsession to drink. You know, I feel like, you know, the third part of this disease is the spiritual malady, right? I think the mental obsession, I feel like it's kind of like, you know, maybe the most overlooked or maybe the least understood, you know, in a way. A lot of people understand the craving that once I start, I can't stop. A lot of people understand the spiritual malady, like being a dry drunk and stuff like that. But the mental obsession, man, it's really hard for people to understand that we could be powerless even in a sober state of mind, right? A lot of times I would think that I was just bad luck or circumstances that I just, you know, I don't know, I must be just a little off that day and I picked up a drink. It kind of feels like a choice, right? But the book is going to, you know, the book is going to talk about how if we're a real alcoholic, right, that we've lost the power, that there are times, certain times where my mind, my alcoholic mind can take me to a place where I don't have the power to choose not to drink, right? And how this, you know, talks about chronic alcoholism being a chronic condition. Chronic means persistent and reoccurring. Right, so for me, I know as a chronic relapser, this mental obsession, and what an obsession is a thought that outweighs all others, right? So that's all it is, man. It doesn't mean I'm sitting around thinking about it all day long or anything like that. You know, it's just, it's an obsession. Right when that obsession hits, it's like a switch gets flipped in my head, man. I could be sober. I could be sitting in my mom's watching cable TV. You know, I go there to dry out, and all I got to do is just stay put, man. And that's the plan. And I'm trying to stay away from that shit. I hate everybody involved in it, right? I'm just like, you know, I'm over there chilling in Lemoore, right? 20, 30 miles away from Visalia where I get in trouble. And a weekend, boom, I'm watching TV, and that obsession hits me. And now it's crowded out every other thought, right? It's like now this switch has been flipped, you know, and I'm powerless. I'm completely there's a lack of power involved. I'm completely powerless to do anything different. The new plan is to freaking borrow money for a haircut or whatever, get the keys, drive to Visalia, freaking, and, you know, and do, you know, get my hands on what I need to get my hands on. To that's the only way to unswitch that, unflip that switch, right? So
yeah,
go ahead.
So when for a while, I didn't. I tried to figure out, well, what exactly is these blank spots that I hear about in Bill
right.
story? And when I was talking to Rob, you know, getting that intercom in here at Tulare County Jail. I'm over here getting like in the holding tank. With goosebumps, like, you know, running chills down, like, down my arm, like, I'm a whole completely different animal when I have, you know, just like, you know, what led me to jail was ultimately, alcoholism, and all the pain and suffering of, being, pretty much treated like a caged animal in a jail cell, and, what would be a normal person's thinking, a non-alcoholic would be my behavior's going to be that of reach out to family and try to get my feet together you know, do anything that's possible to not have to go through something like this, you know, the first thing I do when I get out on the street is walk to the oval here in the north side, and that's like the that's like there you go. You know, that's what truly like said like a flip and like a light switch, like a light bulb, you know.
Yeah.
Okay, this is. You know, you're these are the main mental blank spots that that you hear about in this book.
Yeah, so you know, Hammond's a chronic relapser like me, you know, and I think a lot of people have had those types of experiences, man. You know, it's a mental obsession that really would get me really wondering, like, damn, what the fuck is wrong with me? You know what I mean? Like, after a relapse like that, and I end up, I'm just hopping right back into the frying pan, you know? Like, things were bad before I got sober, and they're bad, like, a day after I start again. You know what I mean? And I'm just right back in, and I'm sitting in somebody's backyard on a couch, you know, just staring at their dogs running around, and I'm like, my social calendar is now completely open, you know? Because this is what it is. And I'm like, what? Is this all there? You know what I mean? What is wrong with me? Like, what am I doing back? You know, what am I doing here again? You know, it's just crazy, man. It's, you know, right?
Yeah.
So it really has me wondering, you know, am I insane, man? It's like, I don't like this, you know, I don't like this life, but yet here I am, right? It's like, I'm not stupid, but here I am, you know, I can't prove that I'm not, you know, what I come to understand is that this is a very real part of this sickness. Right, that there are definite, certain definite times where I lapse, where I lack all willpower, right, and I can't do anything but drink, even in a sober state of mind, right. And there's this, in parallel with that, there's this powerlessness that comes upon me. In parallel with that is this insanity that the book talks about, that they kind of converge at the same time. And when that happens, right, I can't remember how bad it's going to be until after I pick up, and that's another scary part about it, right. That's what this insanity looks like, is that a lot of times, and the book talks about it, right, is it'll take maybe a day or two into my relapse when reality finally sets in, right? And I'll be intoxicated, but I'll be thinking more clearly. I'll have a better grasp of reality of, damn, I blew it again, right? And I'll actually know how the weight of where I'm at will sink in again. And I'll be thinking more clearly 2 days into my relapse than I was 5 minutes before my relapse, right? I don't know if you guys have had experiences like that, right? So that's how powerful this obsession is, right? And this insanity. You know, it's completely overwhelming. And so that's the insanity. Excuse me. So in step two, when it says a power greater than myself can restore me to sanity, that's the sanity that they're talking about, right? They're not talking about all the insanity, the supposed insanity that comes once I start drinking, right? That's just what an alcoholic does, right? There's nothing really insane about that. The insane thing is that I pick up the first drink, right? Ted says it sometimes I start in a blackout and I end in a blackout. I commit the most insane acts in my life in a state of mind called sobriety, right? Which is picking up the first drink, right? So, I don't know how much time I got, but one important thing to know about this mental obsession, right? And the book talks about this, that self-knowledge doesn't fix it, right? How much time do I got?
In about 8 minutes.
8 minutes, I can do this. All right, so with this mental obsession, right, it'd be normal to probably think that I could just stay on guard, right, that knowing about it would be enough to just kind of, to sidestep or to not let it happen, right? But, I can speak from experience of people that wrote this big book. Same thing, they say that you cannot rest on your self-knowledge of this, right? That when that thing, I've had knowledge of this disease, and still, when that obsession is on me, I'm not going to do anything but drink, right? That's just the way it is, right? So I can have knowledge of this trait of the disease and still go on drinking another 20 years, right, or up until my death, this obsession of the mind, the book talks about it's an obsession in the mind, right? So I believe it's not an obsession of the mind, right? It's not something that's produced by my brain. It's not something that's reachable by medication or by psychiatry or anything like that, right? It's beyond that, right? This obsession comes from a place beyond that, I believe, right? So it's a place that only God has access to. And that's the truth for us real alcoholics, right? That's another thing that separates us from other people, is that we can go through rehab, counseling, do all the rehab prevention packets, and that obsession will still come back on us, right? So this is really about, that's what this 12 steps is really about. It's about getting to a place where God will remove this, right? To face and be rid of the things that are blocking me out from God, to bring God into my life in a real way, to access that power. Once I've accessed that power, I can't be powerless, mentally powerless anymore, and the sanity gets returned, right? So that's the miracle of AA, is that I'm not working on staying sober, man. This problem just gets removed, mm-hmm. right? I seek the power of God. Once I've accessed this power of God, the problem gets removed, right? So that's the miracle of AA. So moving on real quick to the second half of step. Do you have anything you want to add?
Sure. Now, when you mentioned insanity, some of the I know you described going out intentionally, like going to account like all my relapses before throughout the years, I know that when they see insanity, that really my experiences were pretty insanity what do you call that when something going out to get just doing the so I was telling Rob before right now before the workshop that going out and doing soliciting strangers, bums in unknown cities, and giving my phone out. Okay, I need to get loaded. Can you find out how? Do I need to give you my phone to make a call, or picking up strangers and having them in my car to meet someone that he knows? Like, these are all like insane And I always thought, well, I'm not insane, you know. That's for the people in the crazy houses. I'm in rehab now, I never thought, you know, I classify myself as that. But now it's like, well, I just, you know, I do have some insanity in me, you know, when I'm on the run or so.
Right on. So, thank you, Jaime. So, real quick, moving into the second half of step one, right? So the first half of step one is that I'm powerless over alcohol. And the second half of step one is that my life has become unmanageable. Right, so I used to think that unmanageability was what, again, kind of like what happens once I start drinking, you know. But really, that's the first half of step one. That's really just the result of the craving, right? My inability to stop. So the unmanageability they're talking about in the second half of step one is the spiritual component. I've come to understand it as a spiritual component, right? And the unmanageability is it's really like an inner unmanageability of the spirit, right? So this unmanageability for me, for being a real alcoholic, is something that is present in my life, whether I'm drinking or whether I'm sober, right? That's kind of the scary thing about it, right? Is that even when I get sober, my life is very unmanageable. I think the earliest description of the spiritual malady is in the doctor's opinion. He talks about being restless, irritable, discontent, right? If you're looking for a very simple description, that's, you know, I think that fits pretty well, right? Get me away, you know, I used to think that when I would be all, you know, strung out on alcohol and drugs, that if I just took those things away, everything would be great, man. But get me a few months down the road, living in a sober living house, I don't have alcohol, I don't have God. There's really just those two solutions to that spiritual malady, right? And if I don't have either one, I start to get really restless, irritable, and discontent, you know? I start to feel like, damn, you know, like, what's in this for me? Even if I'm doing all the right things, even if I'm setting up a pretty good life, right? I have a job and everybody's happy for me. A part of me still feels like discontent, you know? Like, what's in it for me, man? I still need something extra going on, right? I can't be satisfied with this, you know? And then the grass starts looking greener on the other side. Like, damn, you know, at least, you know, and yeah, my life was messed up then, but it's messed up now. And at least there was a drink bar, you know, and then, or whatever the case, right? So I spent a lot of my life jumping back and forth, always thinking the grass is greener on the other side, right? So again, this is lack of power, right? I lack the power to manage my life, right? Life becomes a burden. When I'm sober long enough, life can become a burden. The book talks about being driven by 100 forms of fear, delusion, self-pity, right? Imagine being driven around by those things for any length of time, man. I mean, am I going to expect to get years of sobriety being driven by fear, self-delusion, and self-pity? No, dude, I'm going to freaking, you know, I'm going to go to where I know to get some relief, you know? I don't have time. If you ever want to look at a great description of sober life, of the spiritual malady, look at page 52, talk about the bedevilments. But again, this is just another, you know, another area of unmanageability, another area of powerlessness. And again, this is kind of, you know, really moving beyond the second half of step one. It's really going to be addressing the spiritual aspect of this disease, right? I'm really seeking God. The book says that if I straighten out spiritually, that I straighten out mentally and physically as well, right? Once I've accessed this power of God, as the book talks about, my life becomes manageable. That's the other miracle about this, right? Not just that the drink gets removed, but that suddenly what was completely unmanageable before, right? What was completely overwhelming before, now I just intuitively know how to handle these situations, right? Things that I would have so much fear surrounding for the first 15 years, you know, career, women, school, all these things I couldn't pull off before, whatever, right? Suddenly easily able to navigate these things, right? And it's not because I got real smart or sat around thinking about these things. It's because now I'm seeking God. Right, I see God, and then He takes care of all this stuff over here. Right, so that's what this is really all about. So I think I kind of covered it as much as possible.
Good job.
Thank you, sir.
Good job.
Yeah. So. Good job, Robert. Jaime. Good job. So we'll open it up for questions and answers. So raise your hand, and they can call on you guys.
Sure.
Yes, sir.
It was like so surreal, and like I'm dealing with like the thoughts of the mental obsession, and you know, like, I feel guilty that I've, like, you know, I'm a chronic three relapser, you know, and it's not that I didn't want to let myself down. It's just, like, there's still the mental obsession that I'm going to go back out there, and I don't know, it's hard. It's just, like, I want to drink, but it's already in the back of my mind. I already know how it tastes. I already know how it feels. And it's just like, it's torture to know, like, how bad I want it. And, like, what would you insist to do to, like, your insight of, like, me fighting that mental obsession? Because obviously I don't want to drink anymore.
Right.
And I want to keep on pushing it back. But it's just like the thought of that, this hearing, you know, the beer or looking at it, or it's just like being tempted, you know, and it's just like, man, I already know how it tastes. I already know how it feels. You know, and it's like that.
Right. Yeah, no, that's a good question. You know, and since I've known you to be, you know, kind of like falling into that chronic relapsing too, you know what I mean? And you know, I know you as being a very genuine, sincere type of person, you know? You know, so that's a tough one. You know, again, for me, this isn't like, you know, this isn't a fight that I fight on my own, right? I know the mental obsession as, again, it's that thought that outweighs all others, right?
Yes,
so I wouldn't even necessarily say that you have the obsession, right? Because right now the thought that outweighs all others is to not drink, because you're not drinking right now, right?
Yeah.
So it sounds like you have a little bit of fear, a little bit of probably some healthy fear surrounding the, you know, looking forward, right? And it might be because you kind of know yourself as an alcoholic or having these tendencies. And if you feel like you're not doing, you know, you're not in the circle and triangle, you're not chasing this thing to the extent that you should be, that's probably a natural kind of a fear, man. So, you know, I'm hoping that you're going to, shit, I'm glad you're here today, man. I hope you keep an open heart and open mind to what's going on, and that you can find a qualified sponsor, man, because there is some real freedom in this, dude.
I do kind of, like, refer to, like, Bill as just, like, my family, like, I cave into my emotions, and, like, when they're drinking, it's just, like, well, one drink's not going to do it. We already know what's going to do. What is going to do? And then from there, I, you know, steep into my emotions and more of, like, I'm not saying it's celebrating. It's just like, well, they're drinking, so I don't know, I can do it too. Is this...
I'd like to address that.
Sure.
You know, when I started the process with my sponsor, I was so dang excited. I mean, I couldn't believe it. I'm like, this is the answer.
Yeah.
This is the path. And then I got home to my little house, and I needed a drink. I did not want a drink. I needed a drink. And I was shaking and crying. If my sponsor just finished telling me that he can't help me with my problems, so I'm not going to call him. No meetings were available, but I already know from 20 years of experience that I was a meeting maker, but I did not make it. You know, so there were no meetings, but they don't work for me anyway for permanent sobriety. And so I prayed with all the earnestness that I had and asked God to please, God, please, please, just God, please. Do not let me drink. Please don't let me drink. Please don't let me drink right now. Immediately, I'm God reliant. You know, my self-will failed me. And my sponsor cannot keep me sober.
Yeah.
And so he just put me right on God. I prayed, and that was the beginning of my recovery. You know, the only requirement for membership in this group is a desire to stop drinking. But the requirement for permanent sobriety is to do these steps the way they're outlined. And I just want to say this. When you see those laminates and the 12 steps on the wall, that's not the steps. That is like the most abbreviated form possible. You know, possible. That's just like an inkling, and you don't have to worry about that. Right now, if you are where you are, you know, and you have a genuine open desire, start the process. You know, keep set aside prayer. God, please set aside everything I think I know about my craving. Set aside everything I think I know about my alcoholism.
Do you think it's just like I've already put in my mind?
Our minds are sick, and a sick mind cannot fix a sick mind.
Yeah. Yeah. So I want to give the gentleman behind you in the green shirt. He had his hand up.
And then we're gonna keep going. I'm gonna defend
themselves. That's right.
And I'll respect. I want to know more about almost I want to know more about, like, what is the Jehovah's sponsor? What is the, honestly,
I love that.
What is the Jehovah's sponsor? Because honestly, it's telling you, get a sponsor. Honestly, you're just like, I don't know if I want to get a sponsor because I don't want to get into a wreck.
You might get a wreck with that one.
I want to. Everybody thinks you get sponsored, talk your ways, the way you can talk. You got your own. You find your own demon inside of you, trying to go all the things that you got inside of you. In reality, we all have problems, and we all have mistakes in life. We all have mistakes in life. I've been mistakes. I admit, because I'm human.
For sure.
That's the point of view about being human. And, it's pretty hard. That's why I try, this good word that says when they come, they tell me, hey, tell me what's going on with this. I just try to be understanding, respectful.
Yeah.
And I got this one word that says, like, I heard it, like, out of a voice told me that I saw an individual asking a question. Or somebody, and I stood crying, and I thought, hey, if I was telling him, wouldn't you think I was telling him? So, I'm trying to tell you, I'm trying to be a responsible individual.
Right.
If I tell, I talk to you, it means I'm going to talk about you too.
So.
Well, you know what I mean? I want to be something more than a sponsor. I want to be something to the program where Simon's House show me the way, step by step, by step. You know, that I'm respectful. I'm trying to find out a perfect individual. You're not talking about my problems. I want to be the solution.
Yeah, That's right.
We're going to address your question.
And I want to just talk about the solution. I told you that Bill knew about the problem. He had a terrible craving, and he also knew that it was vital. It meant life and death to work with other people. Dr. Bob had the solution, which is God.
Yeah.
And so the two of them together, one had the problem, one had the solution, chocolate peanut butter, they came together.
Yeah, I'm hungry now.
I have a question. Jaime, you described the insanity pretty well. On step one, it's about being clear about your problem. So she called it an abbreviated way to take the step, and what was it? How long what was the process for you to take that step? And
step one.
How long did it take you to do the step?
I'll admit it took, since it's a pretty lengthy, few months. Yeah.
And that was just you getting clear on your problem.
Right.
Yeah, so, the sponsor, we take people through the big book, line by line. We go through the, so like Connie said, step one is everything from the doctor's opinion up through parts of the agnostics. So we basically, in step one, it's laying out the description of alcoholism. So we turn statements into questions, right? And then we have people answer those questions. We call them considerations, right? Exactly. So you're kind of having an interaction with the big book, because it's real easy to just read over it and then nothing really happened. But when you have to turn statements into questions and then you answer out of your own experience, then you're sort of matching your experience with the description of alcoholism, and then you're starting to, in a gut level, bring it in. Absolutely, yeah, it's absolutely like that. Yeah, this is like a diagnostic machine, dude. You hook yourself up to this, and it'll start to give you a reading, dude, after a few months or so.
Yeah, you'll
know pretty well.
So, yeah, anyways, thank you guys. So now we have to take a 10-minute break, but those guys that had their hands up, I want you to come and talk to the presenters with your questions. Thank you.
We'll resume in 10 minutes.
Yeah, I'm going to shut this off now. Okay.